Welcome back to the Developmental Podcast for another edition of the NXT Roundtable number 20. I forgot to check. Number 20 something.
Four?
Yeah, let's say four. Joining me, I'm Michael Farrah, by the way. Joining me right now is, well, they are both members of ITRWrestling.com, and you can see them live tweet the results of NXT. First of all is Liam Stewart. Liam, how are you going?
I'm good. I am a professional wrestling journalist, which now means my opinions have weight, and I will be in underage girls' DMs very shortly.
And the man who tweets for the opposing team on Wednesday nights, it is for AEW, it is Innes McVeigh. Innes, how are you?
I'm okay. I definitely did not forget to clap, and we had to redo the intro for this. That did not happen, not at all.
Not at all. So the fun thing here is not. We talked about this last week about how, like, although Innes doesn't really work, Liam is the only person that's like properly employed. But seeing as now Innes is getting paid by Inside the Ropes to tweet, he actually has a more stable income than I do.
This is where you can tell 2020 is a fucked up year. I have a more stable income and job before Michael does.
I'm coming to grips with that. I'm coming to terms with it. But now this podcast, finally, after 2 years, we have, yeah, you guys are professionals. You guys are paid wrestling journalists. Is it journalists? Is it right, like, bloggers?
Writers.
Or
writers?
Right.
Content creators, Michael. Content creators. It's okay, Michael. You're a professional TikToker now, so.
I am. I was going to say.
15K at this point?
No, right now it's like 13, so I'm a couple of thousand away. But I found out something.
Velveteen Dream is very excited at the moment.
He wouldn't care. I'm clearly of age. But the cool thing is, I found out from people who know about social media and have people who like earn money through TikTok and so forth. I found out of what the amount you actually need in order to start earning money through TikTok.
Oh, nice.
So apparently the minimum you need is like a minimum of 10,000 TikTok followers, which I have.
Ooh,
big tick. But the overall likes that I need to have in total need to be at 1 million or more.
Jesus.
I'm sitting just under 200,000. So
that's not bad.
Maybe in a couple of months when stuff happens, maybe I will be employed by TikTok. I don't know. And you know what? I honestly
We will all have, well, other than my actual job, we will all have jobs that aren't jobs. It's great.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's odd. So, for context, myself and Ennis did the live article of the results for NXT and AEW.
Mm. And I'm doing the first SmackDown on Friday, tonight, if when this goes out, if you want to check insidetheropes.co.uk. No, .com. Fuck.
Thank you. Thank you for leaning right into the mic as you said that and spiking your audio.
Yep,
But no, I've gone from hating ad breaks to wishing there was more of them. because trying to give context to things while NXT decide to do 5 very short segments in a row is great. But We didn't do a TakeOver episode, and we missed... We got last week's NXT, we missed TakeOver just due to conflicts of scheduling. So we're going to run down... before this, we'd said we'd do the news, fuck it now. We're just going to run down TakeOver, and then we will hop right into this week's NXT. I've decided there's enough places that do news, mainly ITRWrestling.com. You can check that out for your latest news.
How many times are we going to talk about ITRWrestling.com? How is this not part of the ITR Patreon at this point? When am I going to get paid by Kenny fucking McIntosh?
When you are fucking Kenny McIntosh.
What we haven't told you is that Kenny is paying us to mention it on at least 3 times per podcast now.
But no, when we don't have a double bill of things to discuss, we can bring the news back. But for now, let's hop into Takeover, because I finished it this morning. And I say started and finished it this morning because I was working while it was on. So I was in a VC call with you gentlemen whilst it was live, but I wasn't able to watch it. So I listened to NXT Radio, which I guess is technically what this podcast is meant to be, in between a sham and what will eventually get us all arrested. but overall, I think it was a return to form for NXT. A very enjoyable show. A lot better of a takeover than 30. I think a lot of that is due to the main event being, although slow, slightly faster paced and more enjoyable than, unfortunately, Cross versus Lee ended up being. I guess if we just do this in format of quick overall thoughts, and then just best and least best, positive on the word worst, things from the show. Candice EO was excellent. Absolutely loved it. Candice LeRae is possibly the best women's wrestler, not Goldie Io Shirai. So it was the best combination to have. I thought the post-match angle of baiting us with Toni Storm returning, Toni, who everyone thought must have been done with the WWE since she disappeared, and then, boom, we get the reveal of Ember Moon, the War Goddess, the She-Nom, she's back, and very excited to see what she does, because Ember was in NXT at a really unfortunate time, where Shayna just kind of limited everyone, not even by having the title, but because if you wrestled Shayna, you had to wrestle Shayna's style. I think that's fair.
Like, yeah, you had to wrestle in a certain Shayna, way.
I think, off, at least looking back at them retrospectively, every Shayna match in NXT felt the same. So it's good that now we've got this immensely stacked women's division that's probably going to have some call-ups in the draft that's happening this week. Obviously, SmackDown and Raw have 80 superstars being drafted, and I'm sure we'll get... I've got some names in mind that we'll discuss throughout the show that I can see getting called up, and a couple from the women's division. But seeing Ember against the likes of Candice, Rhea, Dakota, Raquel, Io, Aaliyah, Shotzi, the list is endless. The other two things that I really enjoyed, just quickly... Swerve versus Escobar, what a Leah match that was. Flips and shit, absolutely loved it. Surprised Swerve didn't win, although not disappointed. I just thought they might have not been as hot on Escobar as they once were. And Shotzi Blackheart is hosting Halloween Havoc on the 28th of October. Holy fuck. Am I booking this now?
You might be.
Like, stupid, weird thing that ties into the best holiday, but also Shotzi Blackheart hosting it. We get Shotzi ads throughout the show that we'll discuss in a bit. But if she doesn't have a tank, or we don't get a Halloween-themed battle royal where they dress up as other wrestlers, then it's a disappointment. Because seeing Aaliyah dress up as the Repo Man, and fucking, Robert Stone dressing up as IRS, that's what I want. Maybe IRS would be in bad taste given they fired him like 2 weeks ago, but you know, the list is plentiful. in terms of there wasn't really a disappointing match. I guess I would say the most disappointing thing was the lack of a tag title match again. The tag division does kind of remain dead. But. We'll probably get some fresh blood.
Yay,
Jesus Christ.
Well done, you can speak English.
Stutter. Fuck off, you can't. but maybe even doing things with the likes of Ever-Rise, like making them an actual team as opposed to just jobbers and giving them some character time, see what they can do. NXT UK's been running, so like... remains to be seen where Vets will be, but if they're back in that division, that will help. But overall, great show. Michael, give us your rundown.
I quite enjoyed NXT TakeOver 31. Even it felt weird going from 30 to 31 as like it's just another numbered TakeOver. But, you know, seeing as we were having Halloween Havoc in the next couple of weeks, I kind of understand why. That's fine. I thought it was a really good show. I really enjoyed the main event. I thought Candice and Io tore it up. I thought it was as good as I expected it to be. I'm not sure if it was better or worse than the Toronto one. You can make an argument either way. It was really good, however you feel about it. No match was particularly bad or boring or anything, so that's a positive. But I guess I want to say that my least favorite match was probably the opener of Priest and Gargano. I actually enjoyed Kushida and Dream. Mm. I thought that was actually pretty good. And this is coming from
When you remove the obvious underage issue from Dream, isolating it as a match, it was a good match. It was a very good match.
I thought, like, the pacing of the match was different, and Kushida looked different, like, in his match as well, so I thought it was really good, actually. Thank God Kushida won. Oh my God, that was needed. But yeah, the opener was, like, it wasn't bad, it was just meh. It was a Damian Priest match, and I'm not into Damian Priest matches, and a Damian Priest victory is not what I'm into, because I'm really all in on the Garganos at the moment, and I wanted them to have the world, even if it was for 3 weeks. Like, I didn't care, I just want them to have the world. But now on this NXT, we're about to see that they are delusional, and they're crazy. I just love them. I love them so much. But the main event of Kyle O'Reilly and Finn Balor was, again, really good. Injury to Hoy in that one. Unfortunately, cliffhanger for NXT TakeOver 31 with the Ridge Holland thing is just going to lead to a massive what if, like, what happened yeah. from there. But it's unfortunate that it happened, and no one could have predicted what was going to happen. But it's just a shame that they closed it that way now in hindsight.
Exactly. I think it's interesting, just before we throw over to Ennis, that especially leaving both TakeOver and this NXT, like this week's episode, I've gone from thinking it's very clear who's, I say called up, moving to the traditional main roster. At the end of TakeOver, to me, it felt kind of clear that the Garganos, Velveteen Dream, and Rhea Ripley would probably be moving over.
Mm.
But leaving NXT this week, as we'll touch on shortly, I'm no longer confident in literally any of those, because they all continued feuds or started new storylines.
Yeah.
So I guess that's an ode to like the success of the booking and the decisions made. Ennis, before we go into this week's NXT, your sort of wrapping thoughts on TakeOver 31.
You both talked about how like this felt like a return to form and like with bigger show, and I think a big reason for that is because of the move to the Performance Center and the Capitol Wrestling Center, because it just felt bigger. And as much as like Full Sail is like NXT's traditional home and it's familiar ground, this place just feels so much better, and it felt like a takeover compared to the last two, which had its own cool little thing with 30 in your house, but it didn't feel like a takeover. They both felt more like special episodes. But yeah, as you said, I think my match tonight was probably the main event. As much as like, as you said, there's not a bad match on this card, but this one blew me away more than anything else, because we've not seen O'Reilly in this sort of hard-hitting form since probably before he even joined WWE. And you got to see like him using the Brain Buster, top note, like loads of kicks and like knee strikes that literally made Balor bleed from the mouth. It was so, so good. And it really makes me want to see a lot more of O'Reilly's singles. Kushida versus Velveteen Dream, as Michael said, was a lot better than I thought it'd be. Mm-hmm. And it's finally given Kushida that chance that he's needed for a year now. Because he's apart from the Volter feud that they did a year ago on TV, he's done nothing in NXT, and he desperately needed this. And there wasn't like really anything bad. But, I mean, I guess the opener wasn't the traditional NXT TakeOver opener. It wasn't that fast-paced, flippy stuff that they usually do for
openers. Haven't had that for a while, though, which is interesting.
True.
When you just as you said that, I had, like, deja vu of us saying that for the last few TakeOvers.
Mm.
That we've lacked, like, that high-intensity, like, thing like North American ladder match or tag team ladder match at NXT UK. Basically, they should have a ladder match every week.
Yeah, interestingly, I've just checked. Both 30 and In Your House were both opened by Finn Balor, which is weird. Finn Balor versus Timothy Thatcher was TakeOver 30s. Finn Balor versus Damian Priest was In Your Houses. So he's which not the
neither
traditional...
one of them screams high intense style. Yeah.
So it's a nice return to form for that, and it, as you said, there wasn't like a bad thing on this show. So it was, and it felt bigger because it was in the Capitol Wrestling Center. So I think it was a very good show overall.
Yeah, I think good thing mentioned in the CWC there. Obviously, WWE filing trademarks and like sell that as merch and things like that and wrestling toys. So it seems something they're quite big on. Did we all enjoy the aesthetic of like a digital era Coliseum?
I thought this is probably the best that they have made an empty arena show look, because you kind of got the best of both worlds. You got physical people there to make noise. Admittedly, they did like pipe in some crowd stuff, which they could have done a little bit without when we get to the Ember Moon segment. That felt like they're almost drowning her out too much with the piped in crowd noise. But you saw the people there. The chain link fence kind of around the edge makes it look different as well. That combined with the screens and the stage, there's a little bit of a ramp. It's like, it looks like an actual arena, and as weird as it is to say for WWE, it makes it look watchable. So I really think that this is probably the best that they've made Performance Center look.
And it looks full, I think, is the bonus of it as well. You don't have somewhere that you can look and focus on the fact that there's a fan and make, like, tweet, oh, there's a fan at WrestleMania. You're constantly looking at something. My dog has just popped up on the top of the bed, and I can see her in the camera, and it's adorable. Moving on to this week's NXT, NXT number 224.
224. You want to try that again?
424.
Well done.
Yeah, 424, please.
Oh, we missed the 420 episode. Oh, we could have done like a... Oh, that's a shame.
Emanating live from Capitol Wrestling Center in Orlando, Florida. So all we knew going into this show was that we had Ember Moon coming back, and that was originally billed to be opening the show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But shortly before it, we got a tweet that from the official WWE account that Kushida and Ciampa had to be separated backstage per William Regal's instructions. They're now going to kick off tonight's show. So all we know going into this is we had Ember Moon and we had Kushida versus Ciampa. We go right in with Ciampa versus Kushida. Ennis, what were your thoughts on this match? We'll go reverse order this time. We'll start with yourself, go with Michael, then to myself. But Ciampa defeating Kushida by disqualification in 14 minutes 35 seconds.
This is the best Kushida has looked in months. Like, I think it's mainly down to the sort of brutal technical style they've tried to like put on him, but the fact that he can go toe to toe with Tommaso Ciampa believably would have made me laugh out loud a couple of weeks ago. But now, after this sort of new aggressive attitude he's taken on after Velveteen Dream's attacks, has really changed my look on him and made me think, oh, he could actually beat Tommaso Ciampa, and oh, he's actually a force to be reckoned with, because he hasn't looked like that in NXT for months. And this was really close and back and forth. Like, Kushida, if it wasn't for Dream interrupting, as we'll get to later, Kushida probably would have won this match, and at least they're trying to put it over that way. So they're putting Kushida over big time, and I really, really like that. And I think out of all the people that they could sort of use as a scapegoat to show that, Ciampa's not the worst, because he's got so much legacy behind him in NXT that it doesn't really matter. So this was really, really good, and I think a really fast-paced opener, and it really put over Kushida well.
Yeah, I agree pretty much with everything you said. Obviously, Kushida had the hoverboard lock?
Hoverboard lock, yeah.
Hoverboard locked in when Dream came off with the double axe handle. I think commentary said he tried to hit Kushida, but accidentally hit Ciampa, which is why Ciampa got the win.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting note there that it wasn't, oh, he wanted to cost Kushida the match in that way. Like, he wanted to attack Kushida.
Yeah.
I think an interesting note here is that the evolution of Kushida, although rapid and significantly less sort of important or hyped, is very similar to what we've seen with Ciampa.
Mm.
Ciampa lost to Cross when he was kind of the babyface that, like, people knew he was good but weren't really caring about. And since that loss to Cross, you saw the attack on Jake Atlas, that ruthless attack, and Kushida came and did the same to Dream, and then Dream and Kushida had a match, and sorry, Kushida and Atlas had a match, and we saw a bit more of that. It kind of feels like we're going down the path where Kushida will be in a sort of Io Shirai tweener role before probably cementing a heel turn, because I can only imagine the way this goes is because of the way Ciampa's character is. Ciampa won't be happy with getting the win by DQ. He'll be annoyed at Dream for getting his nose in his business.
Yeah.
So I feel like the three of them could have a triple threat next week. And then the winner of that will go on probably to challenge Priest. So it's interesting. The North American title scene, or the sort of mid-card NXT, has finally got some players in it I care about.
Yeah.
What about you, Michael? Did you enjoy Velveteen Dream coming in to attack someone where the legal age of consent is 12 in his country? We've been very analytical and professional. You have to remind people that we're different. You know, we're edgy.
Jesus. Okay. Yeah, look, I thought this was good. What I really liked was the fact that these two have almost had like a parallel kind of journey towards each other, where they've both been like,
yes,
they've got a new attitude, they've got a new style of wrestling, so then to see them collide together is a very interesting thing to watch. So I enjoyed that side of it. I laugh at the picture of William Regal separating Ciampa and Kushida, because it looks very staged, and I love the scowl on William Regal. It's phenomenal.
He's the best.
He's the best. And I would never want to make him angry. I just want to make William Regal proud. The match was really good. The match was good. I didn't anticipate a finish, because neither of them should be losing at this point. So to have Dream come in was made the most sense. I'm getting back on board with Kushida again, which is good, because they needed to get him into damage control, and they have done. So for that, I will give them all the credit in the world. They are doing their best to repair the damage that they did with their own laziness.
Pretty much spot on. I think it's an interesting one where we're now in a position where Kushida is interesting. Even the move from the white shorts that he was kind of known for in Japan to like skinny jeans and keeping the shoes to keep the times better character, and just that sort of ruthless edge, it's different, you know. And I think he's not had many promos or things like that, which I think is good, because promos have never been Kushida's strength, and obviously there is a language barrier there, which, like, it's not his fault at all, but you do need to consider. I'm interested to see where this goes, and that is a positive thing. I was a bit annoyed with Dream's involvement, so not from any other point of like it not making sense or it being sort of not interesting, but just more so I was fairly confident he was going to main roster. And I was looking forward to not having to see him, because as much as this stuff's been quite good, we've got to remember his track history, and this is outside of being announced, of just not being very enjoyable recently. So overall, pretty good, and I feel like we might see a stipulation match next week. Triple threat that somehow ends with the three of them brawling off into the crowd, and then we get like a Halloween street fight at Halloween Havoc, something like that.
You mean a trick or street fight?
Oh, yes. Oh, wonderful.
Oh.
I'm very punny.
No, stop this.
You're very You're very pun employed. But moving forward from that, we get the second pre-announced segment, the original thing meant to open, which was Ember Moon coming back and discussing her return. She said she spent 14 months in isolation, which at that point I thought she was going to start going into the old TNA sort of lethal lockdown monster's ball thing of I've not eaten or seen another human being for 14 months. But instead she says verbatim, Mama wants some gold. And then Io Shirai comes out, which I loved because I think it makes sense that Io would come out at that point rather than her having to like, I challenge you, Io. Like, Io's like, yeah, like, fuck it, let's do it. But then Rhea Ripley comes out because she's like, bitch, please, you might have just come back. I run this place now. Then Raquel and Dakota attack Rhea. Ember makes the save while Io just watches. We get a wee promo, slightly shorter, where she just goes, they're not my problem. This title's my problem, which I thought was great. William Regal comes out and beautiful William Regal fashion. He goes, if yous want to fight, main event. And I was like, okay, Ember Moon, straight in a match, like it. But yeah, it seems Ember's new thing is Ember's Law, which I guess Buddy's Law, Murphy's Law doesn't exist, so that's fine. Nobody's going to tell her, no one's going to walk over her anymore. Nobody's going to tell her what to do because she's at WWE Ember Moon, damn it. Just read the tweet verbatim. And she that is what Ember's Law is, that she is in control of her own destiny and she doesn't wait for people to make decisions for her. Tie this in with Ember's return last week. Michael, you happy to see Ember back? You think she's going to be a good addition to the women's roster? Thoughts on this segment and the intertwining women's division?
I am so happy this wasn't Robert Roode. I'm so happy. I am so happy. This has gone about as well as you could have expected it to. The reveal being Ember Moon, because I think she's phenomenal, and she just had a lot of bad luck come her way with injuries and so forth. So I am excited to see what she can do. It doesn't really make sense because this is my only gripe with it. I have no problem with having Ember Moon part of the NXT Women's Division. Yes, please bring more talent, but also at the same time, she didn't win the main roster titles. Or either one of them. So I'm not sure why she's coming back when she hasn't achieved her goal when she was up there. So that's one thing that might need explaining as to why she's back in NXT. The promo itself was pretty good. She has a slightly different cadence. So I'm sure it was probably hard for her because she's never done a promo in front of essentially no one before. So I'm sure she's getting used to the 2020 norm itself, so I'll give her a pass there. Io coming out makes sense. Rhea coming out makes sense. Raquel and Dakota attacking Rhea makes sense. Tag team match as the main event makes sense. It was a promo train that led to a tag team main event. It's typical TV booking. But that's fine because it's a match that we want to see, and it adds that extra intrigue of it's Ember's first match in like a year and a bit, so that's a big drawing point. And we'll get to the match a little bit later on and how well she did, but I thought the match was solid. I was excited when I heard the music happening, when I heard Io's music and Rhea's music. I was excited thinking, what is happening next? I thought it was really good. I love having Ember Moon back. I think she's going to be a lovely addition, especially if we're going to lose a couple through the draft.
Yeah, exactly. I think, and I mentioned earlier that I had some names in mind. It feels like Rhea is a dead cert part in ways. I feel like we're in this little story with her and Raquel that we'll talk about more in the main event when it ties in. I feel like they will have a match. And like they'll have a match announced probably before Raw for Wednesday. She will lose to Raquel, thus putting Raquel over as the new monster of NXT. And then on Monday we'll get the announcement that Rhea is on her way to Raw. Because it feels like she's done everything there is to do. The other thing I can think is they maybe do Rhea versus Ember on Wednesday for the number one contenders, and then she turns up on Raw SmackDown next week as a surprise. but it does feel like she doesn't have much left to do in NXT. And given that WWE seem to think Asuka, Bayley, Sasha exist and are the only women on the main roster, they could probably do with another one whose name they know. So, yeah, I echo what you've said there, Michael. Innes, you watched this most recently. What did you think of this?
I like the part I like the most about it. I agree with you is that I just like the promo and whatnot. The part I like the most is that she's changed her look. The vampire stuff, the vampire-inspired stuff she's been doing since she debuted was great, but it was a little hokey at times. And I feel like this is a bit more toned down and grounded a bit more. Like the face paint at the side's a little weird, but I think that we'll get to see more of what that's about as we go on. I also noticed you mentioned the cadence, Michael. I noticed she put on a bit more of a Texas drawl on her promos. I know she's from Texas, but usually she doesn't speak like that, and I found that a little weird. I don't know if that's part of her character or something.
I wonder if that's more that before she was putting on a voice to hide the accent, and now she's just speaking as Ember Moon.
Yeah.
It was interesting. There was an article that came out. I think it was Cage Site Seats. Yeah, Cage Site Seats. Discussing how Edge saved Ember Moon's wrestling career, and it was basically mentally come January when she found out she needed a second surgery, she was pretty much ready to give everything up. And then she watched the Rumble as a fan and saw Edge return, and that sort of mentally recharged her and allowed to focus, knowing that she could come back from this. I just hope, given that NXT, as well, we're going to discuss in this episode in two segments, is a bit injury cursed at the moment. Just really hope that Achilles stays fine.
I can't tell you how nervous I was watching the match, going, oh god, just let okay, she's fine, okay, she's moving, yep, she's all good, please stop diving, like that kind of thing.
what would we describe her new aesthetic as? Because I what I find interesting, you mentioned her old look being vampire inspired in it. I almost feel like this is vampire hunter inspired.
Yeah, like a tribal jungle type thing is the only thing I can think of, or like the
a slayer almost.
Yeah, a little
bit.
What
did you say, mate?
A slayer.
Like a slayer or something like that, because like I'm looking, because her old thing was war goddess, so she's got stuff on her face, so like war paint kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she's got what's it called? Camouflage, camo, like style stuff with like jeans and stuff. So it's hard, like she's now a normal person, because before, like, she had that or that vampire or whatever aesthetic that she had before, because with her old music, they never explored character, which was a shame, because it was at a time when they just wouldn't explore character in NXT, because everything was wrestling, and god damn it, character's important. I'm looking forward to more Ember Moon, learning what's happened, why she's in NXT and so forth. I like the new look, and the new music's not bad either, but it's, I'm looking forward to seeing what else this new Ember Moon is.
She almost reminds me of, this is a weird comparison, her aesthetic, especially with like the side, the undercut, is a bit like if Taya Valkyrie and ODB meshed into one.
Oh, it's funny because it's true. Oh, that's weird. Oh, I don't like you brought that up now. I can't
also
see that.
When I quickly googled there to like see ODB to make sure I wasn't misremembering, didn't know it meant one dirty bitch.
You didn't know that?
I know there's a rapper called it's an Old Dirty Bastard, so I just always assumed it was that. We've not got to ODB and Retrona return pending soon. So I've not had a chance to revisit
it. Will be back, we swear. It will be back.
I'm determined to finish it, even if the podcast doesn't like exist in a couple of years. But no, we move on from that to another promo segment, just a short one. We'll kind of talk about this in isolation to what happens later. Adam Cole's backstage with the rest of the Undisputed Era. A very deflated looking Kyle O'Reilly, and Adam Cole clenching his ribs. he tells us that Ridge Holland broke his ribs and that he's a dead man and that's undisputed. And then that's not a warning, that's a threat and that's undisputed. Outside of what we now know will happen later, what were your initial thoughts on a potential Holland versus Cole feud or storyline? Because Holland's an interesting one. It's a very out of nowhere push. Wasn't someone who was established on NXT UK and then called up. He was training in NXT UK, having little squash matches and things like that. And then all of a sudden he was here and then nearly killed Johnny Gargano, which Triple H said in the post-takeover call conference that nobody backstage holds that against him. Like, yeah. It was just a mistimed thing that even Johnny has no issue with it. Like, shit happens. Because I think Holland's been impressive. Like, he is a big guy, but he doesn't move slowly. But to go come into NXT and have your first major stories be Johnny Gargano and then Adam Cole, like, they clearly have big things planned for him. Michael, do you think it was the right move to put him with someone like Adam Cole? Obviously, excluding what we're going to talk about an hour's time.
I thought it was
and now we're in showtime.
I was just confused by it more than anything. I don't even want to say intrigued. I was just confused as to, but like, why though? Not to say like anything I've seen from Ridge Holland has been particularly bad. He's just not particularly memorable either. So, like, literally, the last podcast we did, we skimmed his match because nothing happened of interest. Yeah. So, it's very odd. Like, they strap the rocket to him straight away and go, here's your, you are the takeover cliffhanger, is a very out of nowhere decision. I'm not sure why they did that. Obviously, we don't know what it was going to lead to, you know. Now of what's happened, but I mean, I think it was just there to properly establish what we already knew before, was that the Undisputed Era for the most part are baby faces now. So he was essentially going to be that. No one's going to cheer Ridge Holland over the Undisputed Era. There's your easy and sustainable babyface turn for the UE. So I think that was probably his position. I don't know if it was going to be a long program or anything, but I'm sure it was just there to establish UE as babyfaces more than anything.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, especially because at one point... Oh, on you guys.
I was just going to say, I don't know about that. Not based off this segment. There's something that happens later on with Holland before his match that we'll come to later that makes me think... that he wasn't going to be the focus of this feud, because I may as well talk about it now, because it comes into it later on, before Ridge Holland has his match. He gets interviewed coming out of a Mercedes, and he explains that he didn't have a Mercedes last week, but he does now, thanks to Adam Cole, which suggests there's a sort of higher power to it. I think you're right in that it was meant to cement Undisputed as faces, or at the very least Cole and O'Reilly, but it feels like there was a bigger power behind this, and it wasn't just Ridge Holland, whether it's just America or whether he's actually working for somebody else.
Oh, see, I just interpreted it as he got a pay rise because now he's playing with the big fish.
No, see, I took it as someone paid him to attack Adam Cole, and that was going to lead into a bigger feud with either someone debuting or someone changing significantly.
It's an interesting way to look at it. I didn't think of it like that at all, I must admit. I just took it as I beat up that guy, now I got this. But it could be, and that would be an interesting way to maybe unveil the split of Adam and Kyle as the baby faces and
Strong as the heels.
But another note, just to touch on that, is Kyle says that he's sorry that he let the guys down, and Adam's very thing me to be that was a match of the career making performance. You did well, Finn Balor's next level. Obviously showing that sympathy because he's also lost to Balor, and they had that sign of respect. So it was nice. I'm gonna start this next segment by saying I am never wrong.
Okay. All right, sure.
Just remember that. Okay. Because I have to now admit that So we have two very enjoyable Killian Dean segments up next. we get a quick interview with Drake Maverick backstage, and he says that him and Dane have been, he's been firing Dane messages in the group chats, but Dane's not responding. Do you have Killian's number? I could just send him a text. Got us a tag team match tonight against Everrise. Got us some new great music. Got us matching outfits. We're going to be the best tag team. Dane comes out. He's like, we're not a tag team. I don't like you. Shove your entrance music. Whatever. I'll see you out there. Then they come out to face Everrise. they have a popped up Irish jig music.
So good.
Maverick is in very colourful, quite tight gear. Dane is still in Killian Dane's, like, jeans and a t-shirt gear. And just looks fuming while Maverick's doing a little Irish jig walking down. Bear in mind that Dane's also from a different Ireland to the Irish jig.
Yeah.
They then beat Everrise via Killian Dane just power bombing Maverick onto them and them getting the pin. After Maverick keeps messing up and doing tags. I realised the reason this was enjoyable is, one, because it was comedic character work, and we all know Maverick's great at that, and the deadpan of Killian Dane suits to, you know, what we've described him as like this blank personality canvas. And I don't mean that in an insult, I just mean in terms of he's not been given a character. But also the focus of the match wasn't wrestling. Mm. Which worked perfectly to Killian Dane's strengths and, to an extent, Maverick's. It was a character match. Everrise got shown to be the better wrestlers because they were a cohesive team, which I liked. And by sheer dumb luck and brute force of Killian Dane, Maverick wins. And I think Kane hits him at the end. Dane hits him at the end. But then drags him out and takes him backstage.
Yeah, so Because Maverick tries to do the little jig again. And Dane just gets fed up, punches him, and then has a little more empathy for him and drags him out of the ring and takes him back.
But it's progress. It's progress amongst the friendship that he'll punch him out, but he'll take him with him because they've won together. It's amazing. It is I've turned around on this. The theme music you said as like a cartoon sort of like Irish jig kind of thing. I took it more as like children's TV show opening, like not in the same way as like Firefly Funhouse, but like in the same way, kind of like best friends forever kind of thing. Yeah. And
the thing it reminded me immediately of, in one of the Harry Potter films, when there's a scene where everyone's having fun and messing around, and it cuts to like a. It reminded me of something like that, of like a pure innocence and fun, while this like 6 foot Northern Irish hairy man walks through the ring. It was a lovely juxtaposition of character.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing where this keeps going. I would happily put $50 on these two being tag champions by the time this is over. So that's clearly where this is going, because there's nothing else going on in the tag division. Despite my love of Breezango, give me Breezango. Oh, if Breezango's not involved in Halloween Havoc, oh my god, I'm gonna be so raging.
But just think of the comedic potential of Maverick and Dane versus Breezango.
Take all of my money. Take all of it. I will take out a loan to give that money to you, because I would love to see that. So yeah, I've turned a corner on this. It's amazing. I think Maverick might be magic.
I'm surprised how much I like this, because this contains the two things that I hate most about the tag division: makeshift teams beating actual teams, and something that's similar to the Broserweights. But I loved this, and it was great. And I don't know, like, something just never clicked with me, the Broserweights, and I don't know what it was. But this is basically the same concept, and it's better.
You don't like Pete Dunne.
No, even then, see, I didn't think Riddle was that good in Broserweights either, but I just think this clicks perfectly. Drake is the tiny little guy who's going, come on, we're a good tag team, come on. And Dane just like, fuck off, no. Turns off the entrance music. It's brilliant. And it's not even as if they beat them on purpose. Like, the closing moments, Maverick tags into Dane as he goes to do the Ulster Bomb. pisses off Dane that he just lifts up Maverick and does a powerbomb on him and accidentally beats Ever-Rise, which I thought was great. They're not... they weren't meaning to, but they did. And it was really great. Like, this is the best thing they've done with Killian Dane since signing. Excellent.
And it makes sense that Dane would be slowly turning on him because Dane wants to win.
Mm. Yeah.
It's the same as Mercedes and the Robert Stone brand. She didn't give a fuck what they did with all the comedic shit. If he got her matches, stayed out of her way, and she won, she was happy. And by Mercedes Martinez, I mean Spatula, member of Retribution.
Who may...
Although not for long, apparently.
Yeah, may or may not be part of Retribution. Could we be getting Mercedes Martinez back? Not going to be upset if we get her back. But, yeah.
Robert Stone being like, listen, you went off, you've had your weird phase, we won't talk about it, and that's all they have to say with Retribution led by Mustafa Ali now, to be fair, mm-hmm. which is interesting and a good angle, so
I mean,
remains to be seen how that plays out.
I just don't believe that Mustafa Ali would name his henchmen T-Bar, Mace, and Slapjack.
Just
it just
wait until next
suit
week
what Mustafa Ali would...
When he gets his shit name next week, whatever it's going to be. Liam, I think you had a suggestion. Do you want to see what it was?
Yeah, they should call Mustafa Ali Really Nice Man who's good on Twitter.
Okay, sure.
Don't have a bad word to say about Mustafa Ali. This genuinely one of the nicest humans I've seen on social media. As soon as I saw that video where he sent the dying kid like a replica of his mask to wear over their oxygen mask so kids would stop making fun of them, I was like, you can do whatever the fuck you want. You could be the shittest wrestler and I will root for you. Babyface is a heel. Absolute WWE booking right to a T there. Sami Zayn, Mustafa Ali, Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae, all heels.
Mm-hmm.
WWE can't be babyfaces. It's great.
Mustafa Ali could have all the allegations on speaking out and we'd forgive him.
Just as a note, if Mustafa Ali does get allegations, we will not be forgiving him. Just as a note.
It depends how many people like say the truth.
The views of the Liam Stewart do not resist. Fuck. Ah.
Yeah, but they definitely reflect the views of Inside the Ropes.
Speaking of allegations made during speaking out, Tony Storm's up next.
Hey, well done.
She comes up in a little promo package. And says that this is the longest time she's been away from the ring. This was a break she planned. She needed it. She needed to step away and recharge. And now she's back. She wants everyone to know it's Tony time. Stop fucking saying Tony time.
Hashtag
it is
Tony
shit.
Time. And hashtag childhood. Tony time.
Hashtag Tony time. Hashtag develop some new character, please. I thought that was good. Made sense to do a little promo to capitalize on the momentum of the shock reveal that Tony is coming back to NXT without needing her on the show if she's not back in the US yet or whatever. But she's been doing the same shtick since the Mae Young classic of I'm rock and roll, yeah, Tony time, tiny hats, whoop whoop, my mum left. That's the NXT UK story, I should point out. But
there was no build to that. It was just nowhere.
Well, that was the story between her and Nina Samuels in NXT UK.
Oh, but that wasn't the story in this promo.
And also, who the fuck watches NXT UK? To most people, that just sounds like your girl complaining.
You're slagging her off. No. The story with her and Nina Samuels was that, like, Tony was selfish for leaving her ill mother to care for her sister. Well, she went to go and be a wrestler. When really, what's selfish of Tony is to keep doing these repetitive, bland promos. Like, Tony is great in ring when she's with the right opponent. And she's a great addition to this roster. But this roster is benefiting right now from the fact that even someone like Indy Hartwell, Xia Li, Casey Catanzaro, Lacey Lane, Kaden Carter, they all have character. And Jetty, former NXT UK Women's Champion, has the least character.
Mm.
It's, I want them to do something interesting with her.
I mean, so... I thought the story of the promo was it explained why she's away and why she's not going to be in NXT UK anymore and so forth, and that explained that, and that therefore job done for that. Yeah, I would like to see what this means going forward for her. Yeah, character wise, because like you said, it's been. Because she even said in the promo after she lost the NXT UK women's title, no one's heard from me. And it's true.
She was at the Royal Rumble.
That was going to be my point.
Was
I don't
she?
Know why they didn't.
Oh,
she, yeah,
she was.
She was in the final five.
I thought
five.
That was last year.
No,
I
she was in the final five. That was going to bring that up. Why did they not
year.
Bring that up? She was in the final five before Shayna eliminated her. She was massive in the Rumble. In fact, that was her last appearance.
I'm sure that everyone had big plans after the Rumble. I know I did. I think in terms of story-wise, why she's in NXT is good. I'm like what you said, Liam. I want to learn more about Toni Storm. Apparently, I want to learn more about her mother. But I would like to see more. What a Toni Storm is other outside of the tiny hats. And I'm not against the tiny hats, but more than the tiny hats.
Yeah.
Do we think, with these two returns, do we think it's probable that one of them will very shortly be revealed to not be face? Like, I thought the VTs that ran for the mystery return to me screamed heel. However, Ember throughout the show and in the main event is very much face. Do we think this is just a case of allowing the momentum of her return where people want to cheer her, or the same with Tony, before we reveal and do the angle where actually, no, bad person?
Flip of the coin, really. I mean, it could go either way.
I mean, a lot of British wrestling already think that Tony Storm is a bad person, but that aside.
And her mother too, apparently. She left her, or whatever the fuck that plot point was.
No, Tony left her mother to care for her.
Right, yeah. Gotcha.
God, do you not know the ins and out of the storms?
Storms?
That sounds like some shit reality TV show. Do not pitch that.
Meet the Storms.
No. Tony Storm's bad enough in promos anyway. Never mind fucking reality TV. Anyway.
Did any of you ever watch the WWE reality show with the Foleys?
No.
Apparently it wasn't bad, from what I heard.
I didn't hate it.
It's not terrible.
Because Mick Foley is very likeable and Noelle's attractive. But I tried to think of another word.
Yeah,
and Frank the Clown's funny. So.
I had a nice visual of the gears turning your head going, fuck, how could I put this without being offensive? Fuck.
Yeah. Oh, fuck it. Ennis, you got any thoughts to add to Miss Toni Storm's little VT?
Just that I don't know why they didn't mention the Rumble thing. I think that would have been a good point. I mean, I know she's already established as former NXT UK Women's Champion and former Young Classic winner, but you could have put that she was number part of the final five of this year's Rumble. I think she eliminated two people as well. I mean, Shayna Baszler was the one that eliminated her, so I feel like that would have been good to mention. But apart from that, it's a standard promo, and if it does turn out to be one of them heel, I prefer Tony because she's been faced the entire time in WWE. And I think she'd have a better... So is Ember, I've just realised. But I think she'd be a better, more interesting heel character-wise than Ember. Whereas Ember's already had this character shift as a face, Tony looks to be the same person. So I'd be interested to see her as a heel, if anyone.
We did, once again, using the knowledge of being one of the four people to have ever watched NXT UK, towards her end of her run there, when it was her, Piper, and...
Kaylee Ray
feuding for the title... She was starting to take on a heel role where Kaylee and Piper were so focused on each other, and she was like, I'm still here and I'm still the contender.
Oh, yeah, that was a big build
and
to the Blackpool match, wasn't it? I forgot about that.
Yeah, and she was she was the tweener in it.
Mm.
So there is momentum there that they could address if they go back and watch some of the show they produce to use that. But enough of Toni Storm, because it's time to talk about dog walking with the Garganos. So we're expanding the... I like to think that you have the Quentin Tarantino universe. You've got the Simon Cowell universe. You've got the Marvel universe. You've got the DCU. I like to think we're building the Gargano universe. So we've got the Gargano's house, which is the In Your House house.
Yes. Mm.
But also if you go to the back exit, you can go on walks. Now, the Garganos need a new TV because we saw that Tegan and her selfish knees broke their TV. So in today's episode of The Gargano Life, Johnny and Candace go walking in their lovely matching tracksuits, make them and sell them, WWE shop.
They're beautiful.
12.7 million last quarter, WWE shop made. They could make that alone from me buying these tracksuits. But they're walking with their dog. It's like a 6 out of 10 dog. But they're walking with...
Dog, great. What makes it a 7 out
we
of 10,
we are not talking...
Not
we're not talking about the dog. Move on. Ines, shut up. Liam, go.
It's a bit of a basic bitch.
Oh, okay.
Which suits a Gargano character, to be fair. And they get to their door and Candace goes, it's from Indy Hartwell. Or they're talking about Indy Hartwell, and Johnny goes, who's she ever beaten? And then they see that Indy has bought them a new plasma screen TV, and Johnny immediately switches. Oh, I always loved Indy. Always said she's great. Always said she's a star. And then we find out, we'll tie the later segment in here, that inside it is a USB pen. And on the USB pen is footage that shows throughout the NXT Women's Battle Royal, Indy Hartwell regularly saves Candace from elimination. Mm. I went back and watched the match, and like there's like 12 or 13 small moments where Candace is directly or indirectly saved from Indy Hartwell that we just didn't pick up as anything at the time other than just the construction of the match. But it looks like we are getting an apprentice master sort of thing where Candace is taking Indy under her wing, possibly backstage, like outside of kayfabe as well. And that we're going to add a new character to the Gargano universe that is Indy Hartwell. And I am all for it because Indy has been, as we've said, growing in terms of in-ring confidence and storyline. And this is some character work. And the Garganos are the king of character work. Michael, I feel like you're going to enjoy this as well. So continue my enjoyment.
It's phenomenal subliminal storytelling that we didn't notice at the time was happening, but now you look back on it and you can look back on it in context, not just through highlighted clips like WWE video packages like to change history. You can go back and watch the actual match itself, and if you watch out for it, then you can see that what they are telling you did actually happen. You didn't notice it at the time. Absolutely brilliant. I love that. I love being rewarded for stuff like that. And you know, Indy Hartwell, she's newer on the scene. Give her some, outside of, she had a fluke win over Shotzi one time. But other than that, she's been losing for the most part, but putting up, you know, pretty good performances otherwise. So to have her now properly involved in the story, in the character work, it's a good spot. I hope she can pull it off. We're not sure. We haven't seen her as part of the Garganos yet. If she gets a little tracksuit, I'm all about it. I think... And to have...
Oh my god, yes! And it just says Junior, and they make her buy a dog. Oh! Everything should be comedic.
I am all about it, and I think it's a great fit, and it's a great use of someone like Indy Hartwell, who is newer on the scene, so she's going to be in a junior position with someone like Candace and Johnny, who have been around for years. So I love every bit of this, and I'm very, very excited to see what this actually looks like. We've heard the setup is phenomenal. I hope the payoff is good as well.
I am. You know how we have, like, New Japan have the Young Lions?
Mm.
I want Candace and Johnny to start talking about the Young Garganos. They make her move into their spare room, and she has to do the cleaning, and, you know, she's very dedicated, and then she gets to go in a tag match. And then her and Candace win the fucking women's titles so that they can come to NXT where they should be, given we have about 10 NXT women's tag teams compared to main roster's 1.5, because Lana doesn't count as a full human being. Yeah, Ines, of everyone, you're going to have the most down-to-earth view on this segment.
Oh, wow,
so.
Well done. I'm surprised you predicted that. Like... I like the actual like dog walking bit and Indy buying her TV, and I'll tell you what, I absolutely love the detail of being able to go back and watch it in the match and see Indy. Because I did not see... I don't think I saw anyone point that out. It's such a minute detail.
No one did.
It's great. I don't know if I like this direction. I think I would rather just have Candice and Johnny go to the main roster. And I know that's probably not
the
popular opinion.
That is a horrible opinion. Get out.
No, right, no.
Yeah, like...
Bring Dinner to the Garganos to the main roster. I think you could do interesting stuff
it.
On Smack. No, give them a chance. They might. To be fair, SmackDown's been doing some good character stuff lately. Like, The Fiend and Alexa. That's been great.
The problem is, if they go to the main roster, they will wrestle the same person for 15 weeks in a row.
Are you really
such
complaining?
As Apollo Crews and Bobby Lashley.
Are you really complaining about Johnny Gargano wrestling every week? I'm not.
You know who I don't need?
Yes,
endless...
because it would be the same person. It would be Johnny Gargano versus Curtis Axel returning.
We don't
from
get
the
that on NXT. How many
weeks?
Times have we seen Gargano Ciampa? That's happened
we
for
would
like
get,
fucking
we
a million
get,
times.
Very different. We would, very different.
Yeah. We would get endless tag matches of Johnny Gargano and Baron Corbin versus Matt Riddle and whoever the fuck that Gargano is.
It'll
against.
Be new it, stuff for them.
No,
new people.
Absolutely not.
Also, to talk about Triple H, because I always want an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
In that post-match press conference, I should probably credit who asked it. I can't remember. I'll find it in a minute. But someone discussed the fact that is it maybe time for the Garganos after being unsuccessful here to be drafted to Raw or SmackDown. And Triple H's response was quite interesting in that there people seem to have lost the idea that it's impressive for someone to be in a brand for a long time. Like there seems to be the constant need for change and mix up in what brand people are on when you can tell stories even without moving brands and it's impressive to be so dominant in a brand for so long. And I kind of think I like the idea of Johnny Gargano never being on the main roster because pay-per-views are integrated, especially the big four.
True.
So he can still wrestle on Mania, Survivor Series, SummerSlam, Money in the Bank. Like, we can still do these interesting things. I think it would be really interesting for an NXT person to win Money in the Bank when it's back to being a normal ladder match and then cash it in on NXT. I think that's, like, there's a lot that we can be done. And I just enjoy the amount of creative freedom they have in NXT because I don't think this is a writer doing this.
No.
Like, it might have a writer's input, but it's that level of creative freedom that I think people talk about AEW have. But in terms of character work and individual excellence, this is very, very much a Johnny and Candice thing. I just want to quickly...
Something interesting, whilst you're doing that, something interesting that happened before this that I haven't seen many people point out. They did like a weird fax thing where it was like Johnny TakeOver. Did you know that Johnny Gargano has competed in over 20 NXT TakeOvers? I don't know if that's going to be a regular thing, because I don't think we've done that before.
They did one after an ad break later about Damian Priest,
a
superstar profile.
I wasn't sure if that was going to be
a sponsored segment.
Right. I wasn't sure if that was going to be like something relating to the Garganos, where it would just be like, as the weeks go on, it would be more and more like self-obsessed and be like, Johnny Gargano, like Matt Fat's kind of bullshit, where like Johnny Gargano, I don't know.
Oh, that would be lovely.
That would be great, but that's not happening.
It was Alex McCarthy of TalkSport, and yeah, he said that there's also the ability for people to literally move anytime. Like, he pretty much said like the draft is the one time a year where a mass one happens. But if Johnny or Candice want to go and do a story on Raw or SmackDown or NXT UK, like that's able to happen.
Well, maybe not UK. But,
yeah, and then he said these performers are able to give themselves a new lease of life and are capable of remaining in any one area for long periods of time without losing the shiny penny effect. Which I think Johnny did for a bit.
Yeah.
Same with Ciampa, but I think we're both back. Because the roster around them refreshes, we still get fresh matchups. And I think that's kind of the key difference to NXT of past.
Yeah. And
So, following on from dog walking with the Garganos, a personal highlight of the
brilliant.
Show, we have Leon Ruff, new WWE signee, part of a pretty Evolve heavy
yeah.
signing announcement, like Performance Center Class, I think they're called.
Yeah.
With, I think, 6 or 7 names all Evolve. I'm not going to go through them. You can look it up. It's available everywhere. And he's against Lumos, who we saw return last week.
Last week, and in just a little segment. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see last week. That'll be why.
Yeah. This is a return to... Sorry, against Austin Theory, not Lumos. Getting ahead of myself there. And Austin Theory defeats Ruff in about a minute 47 with the ATL. But Ruff, once again, as we always discuss, is actually the most interesting part of that match because he bumps like crazy. He hits a beautiful Hurricane Rana, gets in a lot of early offense. Following from Ruff getting beat by Theory, Theory does a promo, calls out Adam Cole, basically says he's the new Adam Cole and he's the future, and if anyone backstage wants to challenge him, come on out. Lumos comes out and they have a 12-minute match. Austin Theory got 2 back-to-back matches. Back-to-back.
You know what I don't need? 2 Austin Theory matches in one show, let alone back-to-back. It's that he's on every week and he is burning fast. And not just due to like the allegations and stuff around, even if you get that out of it. He's a very dull performer in that He looks like a standard wrestler. Cool. He wrestles fine. He wrestles perfectly well. But his promos are generic. His delivery is generic. His face is generic. His abs are generic. He is generic creator wrestler, and I see he's just nothing. But they put him on every single week, and I am very over it.
He is a budget Bobby Roode. Yeah. And that's not a good person to be a budget version of the budget Triple H. But I just don't care. And once again, I think properly moving on from the allegations and stuff, just to talk about him as a performer. His in-ring style is akin to Tyler Bate in terms of he does a lot of the powerhouse stuff, but then he'll throw in a moonsault or things like that. But also, wrestling Dexter Lumos.
Mm.
Really? Lumos' character works great, but the man is slow. He is a slow in-ring worker. And then the one time he did an interesting flip, he broke his ankle. Which is why it had that weird cut, by the way, just to address when we talked about it at the time, why it looked like it was staged, as if they'd cut it and there was a crack. There wasn't. He blew his ankle out, so they cut it so that you couldn't see it. But it's just, it's... I liked the Ruff match. I thought the Ruff match and the post-match promo was fine.
Yeah.
1 minute 47, he looks dominant. Ruff gets on the show, which I'm all for. He's cocky, he's arrogant, he's young. And then you just give me 12 minutes of nothing.
This was, please turn to Dynamite. that's what this 12 minutes was. I could not tell you. I haven't even watched Dynamite this week, so I couldn't tell you what this match
Ennis,
was.
What was on at this point?
Who knows what Brody was on. Lee was fucking great. You should actually watch that. That was a really good match, but everything else was, fine.
If it was against that, then it was gonna be, we're going to Dynamite. But it's, I like Dexter Lumos, and we've talked about that before. He's a character wrestler, so use him in ring sparingly. And then when he's not wrestling, which should be most of the time because he's a character wrestler, you don't want to lose that aura. You should be having him in little segments and being really creepy and standing in the background where you didn't notice that he was actually in the background for, and it's terrifying. That's how you use Dexter Lumos, and he did this before, not like before he got injured. He was doing 15-minute matches with Roderick Strong, and he just shouldn't be doing it.
You know what it's kind of like?
Yeah,
this
exactly.
is going to be a weird comparison. So just to preface this, yeah. It's a
right,
little bit like...
what else?
It's a little bit like Aleister Black. You don't have Aleister Black go out and wrestle 12-minute matches. Aleister Black's the kind of guy who you put backstage, have him do weird promos, come out, kick someone in the head, and that's it. And the thing is, Aleister Black's a good wrestler. Dexter Lumos is also good, but he's not he's not got the level that Aleister Black has that they can't fall back on it. And I had a weird experience with this because I didn't watch last week's show, so I thought this was Loomis's return. And I thought it was a really weird return to have him come out and do a 12-minute match like it was kind of nothing. But obviously it wasn't. But even so...
It wasn't very Loomis at all.
No.
Not at all.
No, which is weird.
I will give Theory, so I did like Theory continuing the bit of his cocky personality by doing the knuckle drag to take the piss out of him. But, yeah, so in about 12 minutes, Loomis wins with the... I got the exact name of it here. Oh, where is it? Because he wins by choking him out. The Katagami. And then as he's still holding it in, you know, doing the bit where he cuddles him while they pass out. Our favourite boy, Cameron Grimes, saves us from this boring segment by hitting a cave-in on Loomis, calling him a freak and saying, next time I ask you a question, you answer me. I think this is great character work from Grimes. Mm. He was pissed off that Loomis just stood and stared at him rather than answering. The cave-in is excellent. Until the main event, because someone returned, it was the finisher of NXT. Like, it was the best finisher on NXT. Unfortunately, the Eclipse is back.
Mm.
Or rather, fortunately, the Eclipse is back, which usurps it. But this seems to me, if we say that Kushida, Ciampa, and Dream is maybe building to the world title picture through a little triangle story, this is probably the North American title story little triangle. Mm. Where they're going to have... We'll do Loomis versus Grimes. Theory will get involved. We are probably getting Theory versus Priest for the title sometime soon. Because they will do some interest... They could do some interesting character stuff.
But I don't want
the match. But you know how... Because we get a very short interview with Priest where he's talking about the after party and how wicked it was. Because that's like... He's like the fucking... He's the sort of rock star that will get HIV through needle. Like, that is... Whereas Austin Theory is the sort of guy that says he's a heavy drug user because he smoked a joint one time on a night out in between drinking Alka Pops and vodka sours. I was about to say whilst also questioning his sexuality, because that's just the sort of vibe he gives. So, I mean, even better. But, like, you could do interesting things where... Priest turns up in his oversized, like, 80s in-trend limo, and then Theory's turning up in a Mercedes because that's what's fashionable to him. Like, the match would be rank because I like Priest, and I think he's got a lot better in-ring. He needs the right opponent, and Theory is no one's right opponent.
Yeah.
But we get I forget what they're... They have a name for these little VTs, but we get a Balor-Riley recap. A prime target. There we are, that's the one. Basically telling us the extent of the injuries that both men suffered, with Balor suffering a fractured jaw. Luckily, no title vacation. He won't be able to speak for a couple weeks, they tell us, before he speaks. And Balor just says that people were asking before if my title reign is going to be as good as the last one. I think people were saying, will it be better, because your last one wasn't very good. But he says that they just got an answer, which I think is great. Ties into the fact that he has respect for O'Reilly as a competitor. He talks about how it was one of the hardest-hitting matches. O'Reilly, I think, noticeably says that he didn't lose the fight to Balor. He just got hit first, which I like, the idea that they both knocked each other out, but Balor's landed first. Doctors inform us Kyle won't be cleared for a couple weeks, which I think's good. Give him time to recover and give him time to stay fresh. And I thought it was a really good little segment. Killed some time without adding bullshit to the show. If you hadn't seen TakeOver, it made you want to go and watch the match. And it informed us of the injuries without being like, Finn Balor's not fit to compete. I assume, based off what we've seen with Dash Wilder and other wrestlers, a fractured jaw's a couple of weeks just to clink it in pace and re-heal, as opposed to a dislocated elbow, which is a slightly more serious injury, hence why Balor can keep the title. What were your thoughts on the prime target in us?
It was good. Like, I feel like they haven't used a prime target to, like, recap a show before. They always tend to use the prime targets for, like, building up to, and it was an interesting different way of doing it rather than just having Balor come out or appear on screen going, my bra is joking. Yep, my jaw is fractured, and I won't be able to be around. So it was a nice little recap, and also made people want to watch the TakeOver main event. I'm kind of not entirely on Balor being off TV for weeks. I don't know how I feel about that, but it is what it is, and we can't really do much about it. So I hope they have another plan in the works, because since Karrion Kross got injured, it's been, oh shit, last minute this, oh shit, last minute this. And I kind of hope they take Balor being off TV a couple of weeks to actually build up a proper story, because we've not had one of them since Keith Lee lost the title.
Yeah, exactly. Everything's felt put together, whereas even O'Reilly Balor felt like designed, which was good.
And it's not, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I'm not saying those stories were bad, but they were very quickly put together with very little build, which was an issue.
There's no long-term target at the moment, and I think we take a couple of times to design. Like, I couldn't even tell you who Balor's next opponent is going to be. Like, we're talking about this, I mentioned this idea of this triple threat to lead to it, but if Balor seems to be face now, so I guess someone like Ciampa, but Ciampa's not going to win. It's, and obviously we all want the story, or at least we mentioned we'd want him, where this leads to Demon versus Cross at TakeOver Mania time, which is a long way away, that they need to keep it exciting to get.
Well,
to,
not that so, far away. Less than 6 months.
Yeah, well, 6 months in wrestling in COVID world.
True.
Is like
6 months ago, we're literally changes. Just a month into COVID. So that, I don't want to think about that.
So we get a Ridge Holland match. He is up against a fellow Brit in Danny Burch. Barrett uses his intense knowledge of the UK to tell us that Yorkshire and London are like two different places.
I loved Barrett putting that over. That was fucking excellent.
Just to make sure that people are like, oh, these are the same person. Holland wins comfortably in 2 minutes, continues to beat him down post-match, which might be the worst thing he's ever done, as we'll discuss shortly. Only Larkin comes in to save the day, because remember, they're a tag team who don't wrestle as a tag team. And then we get Birch doing two twisting Topiko Hijos, and on the second one, Holland catches him, but he twists his ankle, which buckles under his weight and his knee bends. We now know that it's a broken ankle and a torn, is it metatarsal in his knee?
It's something akin to, it's like the string at the back of your lower leg, essentially.
Yeah.
And it looks like he'll be out for...
The recovery time is 8 to 9 around 9 months.
Yeah, which is a shame.
Which obviously sucks. I've got it here. Dislocation and fracture of his left ankle, patellar tendon rupture, and patellar dislocation. Ooh. So, like, basically the kneecap's dislocated, the muscles that attach to the kneecap have split, and obviously broken and fractured and dislocated his ankle, so the bone is split and is out of place. It's a horrible rehab process, obviously. Thoughts with Holland, worst timing for it. Hope for a steady and John Cena light recovery.
He seems like
a lovely guy. He looks like Chris Pratt.
His leg essentially disintegrated underneath him, which is, oh, and the thing is, I didn't notice at the time, so because I was watching it live, and like as I was watching live, like there was a knock at the door, and I came back, and then suddenly it just looked like the brawl had ended, so I didn't really notice anything. We come back and he's on the stretcher, and he is like, oh god, what has happened? This doesn't look like storyline. And then they show the replay again, and it's really gross. Like, it's not Sid Vicious WCW leg snapping and throwing legs vibe, but like when you look at the leg as he's crumbling down, it's just, oh, it's, you don't like looking at it. It's not fun, especially when you know the result of it. It is unfortunate because he had been put in such a position, as we said before. He was the TakeOver cliffhanger. He had a squash match. Adam Cole cut a promo on him. This was obviously going to lead to something. So it is just terrible timing for him to get to be told that your leg's fucked and we might not see you for a year.
I had a similar experience to you with this, where I didn't notice the leg buckle at first because I was typing away and doing other things, tweeting, whatever. And then we actually get a segment after this.
Yes, yeah, like with the stretcher, with the replay, with everything, and they like give like thoughts of with him and that kind of thing.
Because I just thought the brawl had ended, and I thought it was odd that he ended lying down. And then we get a Thatcher's Thatch Can class, which was missable in the exact same thing we've had for about 6 months from Timothy Thatcher. Mm. And then we cut back, and they show you, and they acknowledge it, and they tell you that, and Holland gives the thumbs up as he's lying down, like, I'm okay, guys, thank you. Like, completely out of character, which is when I knew it was serious, and then you see the replay. There's not much to discuss, because anything we would have to say about the match is now mute, because...
There is a positive, potentially, if they do go the direction of it being a higher power and being someone who paid him off to thingy Adam Cole. They could continue the feud and just reveal the higher power or have someone else take Holland's place.
It's me, Austin! it was me all along!
It's not as if the storylines could be... If they do go that direction, they don't have to drop the storyline. But also it is a bit of a shame because Holland was such a prominent part in it.
They clearly came back to it because they could see from the footage that, like, okay, he's going to be out for a while. We can just point this out immediately rather than tell you on social media because those who were paying attention in the moment would have saw that was gross. That was very gross.
Does anyone want to discuss the Thatcher's Than?
No.
Thatcher's Thatch Can
it's,
class?
It's no. the same as it has been the last few
do
weeks.
Do something... It no longer does anything for me because he loses and also they're the same thing. The point of it is life grinds you down until you quit and I'm going to be damned if it does it to me. Cool. Do something different. You're really good in ring. We know you can be, but do something different. We get a little Shotzi Halloween Havoc promo and then we go to Shotzi versus Xia Li, also known as Liam versus Dai. And she comes to the ring in a Halloween Havoc top, and she's like, Halloween Havoc is going to be ballsy! Oh! And I'm all excited. And Xia Li comes out. Did Xia Li say, I'm spicy?
No!
I swear coming to the ring, and in the ring she says, I'm spicy, or it's going to be spicy.
No, she did say something, it wasn't that, but I remember, what was it? It was something stupid like let's go or something. It definitely wasn't I'm spicy.
If I go to see all in Messenger, because you have to do that to actually click into things properly, and I search the word spicy, Dai responded when I asked if she just said, I'm going to be spicy.
Is she curry man?
With a video message. Well, that's what... I just thought it just might have been a horribly racist book angle, I'll be honest. And with it being... WWE, honestly, would any of us be surprised?
Nope.
If I just search Xia, I mean, actually, he speaks about her quite a bit, doesn't he?
You will never see a group chat of anyone, probably even Xia Li's family, that mentions the word Xia more than this group chat.
He just has a developed interest in her. You can't fault the boy.
That's a nice way to say simp.
If she had a Twitch channel, he'd be giving her all his money.
Oh my god.
Let's just not mention this to Dai. Let's just see if you listen to this podcast, just tweet Dai and tell him something about him being call him a simp for Xia. And just don't explain it. Don't explain it. Just don't say
silence for a second while I listen to this. While I listen to Dai's voice message.
Oh.
Is it something racist? I bet it's racist.
It's in the group chat, so it will be.
Instead, I put, did Xia just say too spicy rather than too spicy? So instead of Xia Li saying something racist about her, she was just racist to Spanish people, according to my message.
Great.
I'm fairly sure she said too spicy.
How long she did?
Or it sounded like that.
She said something at the entrance. Well, I just don't
right,
remember.
You know what?
Are we going to
go
watch this?
We're
going to
answer
this.
We have spent way too much time on this, so I'm going to talk about the match while you
Michael,
do this.
Shall we go back to why the Gargano's dog is a 7 out of 10 and not a 10? Oh, come on, it'll be a fun conversation.
It is 1:20 in the morning. So Shotzi versus Zaya was fine.
Oh yeah, and Shotzi had a Halloween themed tank.
Yes, which is awesome. Shotzi is great. Shotzi gets another win. They're really hyping up Shotzi. She's amazing. Halloween Havoc's going to be so much fun. But the thing is, after Zaya loses, they've been teasing the heel turn for a few weeks, and then Boa comes out with a letter that she opens and she reads. She looks upset, and then she leaves. So whatever that letter means, racist connotations aside, I thought it was her release pages. I thought WWE were being very on the nose. So other than that, I'm not sure what else, it's just going to be like, I don't know, she's being inducted into the Chinese mafia. I don't know.
No, it is too spicy.
Is it? Really?
It's too spicy. All right, click on my screen share. Click on my screen share so you can hear this together.
This is great podcast content. We are currently watching that NXT.
Yeah, but.
Go ahead.
Are you ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
She does say too spicy. She did. Holy
shit. She does say, let's go too spicy.
And wait for it.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, she does say too spicy.
She's pointing at her waist. She's pointing at her waist saying too spicy.
That's a message for Dan. Yeah. That's what that is.
You can't handle me, I'm too spicy.
Tell you what, if you're going to tweet Die, tweet him going hashtag too spicy for Zaya.
Too spicy.
No at context.
Day Owen,
at too day Owen, spicy. Hashtag too spicy. Just no context. Please do this. Thank you. Fucking hell.
Thoughts on the match or the closing angle? Either one of you, please.
The closing angle is kind of the most interesting part of this. Shotzi continued to pick up momentum by getting some wins in, which is good. Her hosting Halloween Havoc is going to be great. They're going to do something with the Robert Stone brand, I'm sure. They're doing something with Zaya on her heel turn. She's fine in ring, and you know, other than too spicy, she's not had too much character. Boa hasn't been used. WWE-like managers, where NXT do, and NXT are good with managers. It's a small note, but I like the fact that the letter wasn't in English.
Yeah.
So we couldn't read what it said by zooming in or whatever. Like, it was in, I'm assuming, Mandarin. I'm sorry if that's wrong. Hashtag Liam is racist. It's probably something from her past, or we're probably basically going to get heel Iowa Bo as a manager, and that's cool. More to the roster, more people developing. And Shotzi had a spooky tank, and we stan Shotzi Black.
Well, you two do. I'm on the fence still. She's fine.
You're an idiot.
Oh, you don't like fun. you don't like fun. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the issue.
After that is our main event. Ember Moon and Rhea Ripley taking on Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai. Match goes about 12 minutes, less than the Dexter Lumis match, though. And Ember picks up the win with the Eclipse over Dakota Kai. No pinfall broken up because Raquel and Rhea have a big table bump on the outside, continuing their smaller feud within this wider feud, which is good, you know, layers. Noticeably, Ember Moon has new music and new ring gear. Given how bad WWE's music has been recently, see Peyton Royce.
Mm-hmm.
This one's good. It has lyrics. They've paid a singer. It's rocky, which suits her, not Balboa, like rock music-y, which suits her character with it. Like, it's not too different to what we know. It's a bit generic.
Yeah.
Like,
issue with it. I feel like they could have remixed their old theme, because they've done that for someone else. I can't remember who, but they remixed someone else's old theme.
I think they really want to differentiate this. True. Though. So keep like, as far as generic-y themes go, I listened to it and I was like, this suits the energy she's coming out with. She comes out in like almost like torn skinny jeans aesthetic with like bracers that are kind of dangling down. She's got, you know, the little eye war paint. She's got a bralette on that's the leather as well. Like, it's very biker, heavy metal, vampire huntery, to stick to that sort of trend. Dakota Kai and Raquel, once again, love them as a team. Dakota hits a beautiful chiropractor at one point, like, really good, which is a good near fall. And God, I missed the eclipse. Mm-hmm. What a fucking over-the-top but beautiful move. I thought that's how they were going to debut her, if it was her, was that she would hit Io with the eclipse. Especially because at one point it cut to a shot where you could see the turnbuckle behind. But no, it was a really, really good match between four really good competitors. I'll let Michael go more in depth with this because I know you very much enjoyed this. And then we can throw over to the misogynist then to say it was bad because it was female wrestling.
Yeah, this was really good. Ember looks phenomenal for being away for over a year. She looked really good. So I was happy with that. Raquel and Rhea, I look forward to seeing that eventual one-on-one match that they're building towards, and they're building that quite well. They eliminated each other from the Battle Royal. They eliminated each other from the match. It's all, they're all just like, they feel like equals in a way. Even though Rhea is clearly more established and everything, they feel like they're equals in terms of strength and power and dominance and so forth. Dakota is always good value, and she was the perfect one to take the eclipse first because she can flop around. She can die, essentially. She can die in the eclipse and it'll look great. And I thought it was really cool. Ember look, and I, having Ember as the main event was so, like, it was always going to be hard considering what they were up against with Dynamite, with Jericho's 30-year thing, and the Cody and Brody, Cody and Brody, dog collar match as well. But I thought this was solid. It was really solid, and I think Ember looks great, and I'm looking forward to seeing her versus Io at some point. Whether I want it straight away or don't, I don't know. But I will take it whenever it is given to me.
Exactly. I think that's pretty spot on. Ennis, why was this match bad? Because they're women.
I know, I thought this was pretty good. As I said before, I'm not 100% on Ember's new theme, but I'm sure I'll grow to it. I think it gave Moon a good spotlight. If I remember right, she was tagged in for the majority of the match, so she managed to show off and show that she didn't really have much ring rust, which was good. And I'm intrigued to see where they go with Ember. I assume they're going to Ember Io down the line, but I'd rather they go a bit slower with that. I don't want them to go that straight away because that feels like, well, you're kind of hitting the peak of Ember right away, whereas you could use some other time to build it up in some other feuds, maybe with Dakota and Raquel, and then go into the Io feud. But overall, this is a really good main event, and I think it did well to show off that Ember's, to remind people that Ember is actually really, really good.
Got slightly distracted because Ringside News tweeted out. Kairi Sane describes living in the USA with WWE as the darkest 3 years of my life. And Kairi has quote tweeted it. I said the complete opposite. And this is the most typical case of using Google Translate I've seen. I said, and the paper wrote, character, meaning it was the most fulfilling life in 3 years in my life, and I overcame a lot of difficulties. This is the same Ringside News that recently wanted to put to bed any rumours that they were untrustworthy.
Yeah. Wow! Yeah. That's horrendous! That is awful!
That is. This is why I tweeted saying wrestling journalism doesn't exist.
And you're, if you would like to see some proper wrestling journalism, itrwrestling.com is where you go to make sure that doesn't happen.
Genuinely, if I can say one good thing about it, right? I mean, I can say loads because I'm on it, and therefore it is inherently in my benefit for it to be good. But when I look for an article or a YouTube video, there's nothing worse than it being like, former WWE champion dies, and it's like Hornswoggle, not to discredit Hornswoggle, but when you read former WWE champion dies, you don't think about that one-off cruiserweight title reign. Whereas we will just tell you the information in the title and you can click in further for the analysis. So even if you just follow the Twitter account, you will be able to get most of the information through the titles. Because we're not here to drive clicks through that, which is agrees with a lot of the issues. Like, there's still tweaks, always will be, but it's been good so far. Overall, I think very strong episode of NXT. Strong start, strong end. Bit of stuff in the middle. Take away Austin Theory and Dexter Loomis and just let the show be 50 minutes shorter. Could have put the Robert Stone brand on for 5 minutes and it would have been, you know, some nice comedy to add to it. We have two more shows until the Halloween episode.
One more show.
I was right. 14th, 21st, and then the Halloween episode on the 28th. So, plenty to cover, plenty to look forward to. Nothing announced yet for next week, I believe. AEW have just announced Hikaru Shida versus Big Swole.
Yeah. Next week is AEW's 1 year anniversary show, so they've got a big show coming. They've also got Cody versus Orange Cassidy for the TNT title, and I think Lance Archer versus Moxley for the world title. So they've got a big show next week. So I'd expect a couple of big things from NXT.
Damn.
Interesting. Especially with the draft obviously happening tonight on SmackDown and Monday on Raw. You know, NXT could be a whole new landscape by then. Michael, would you like to plug your TikTok, your Twitter, and anything else you want to sell, you corporate sellout?
For corporate sellout? I got kicked out by the big corporate. if you want to follow me, you can follow me at Michael Farrow on Instagram, at Michael Farrow 92 on Twitter and on TikTok. I have 13,500 followers on TikTok and like under 300 on Twitter. Just putting that out there because that's hurtful.
Twitter is homophobic.
Yeah, I'll pay that. Innes, do you want to plug your shit?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter as and everywhere else pretty much at Innes_McVey, INNES_MCVEY. I am doing the results for SmackDown in the first night of the draft tonight on ITR Wrestling.com. And I think I'm also doing an article on every draft pick from SmackDown. So if you want to see that and can't watch the show, or if you can watch the show, also check that out. I'm bad at plugging stuff. Just go on ITR Wrestling. You'll probably see something of mine.
Yikes.
You can follow me on Twitter at Liam Aister, at Instagram at Liam ALXJer. I watch Monday Night Raw, so you don't have to. So if you follow my Twitter at Liam Aister, or the Inside the Ropes at Inside_the_ropes, you can see all the headlines and draft results as they come, so you don't have to sit through 3 hours of borderline insanity. I'll take that hit for you.
I can't believe that you signed up to watch Raw every single
No, I, yeah, I, here's the I, thing. I spec- so Ken, so Ken, Kenny got in touch with me first, and I said I could do NXT or AEW easily, because I never have a shift on Wednesday where I finish work later, and within sort of the mainstream Western wrestling, those are where my like areas of knowledge lie. Like NXT is my top pick, and then I said I could do SmackDown as well because I'm on off Fridays. Then I remembered I'm off Mondays, so said I would rather not because it's like my bottom pick, but I could do Raw. And then Kenny was like, well, I'll make sure you don't do Raw then. And then a certain Innes got asked and was like, I'll do AEW seeing as Liam's doing NXT, and can I do SmackDown then? And Kenny wanted to be fair and let us both have one good one and one that we didn't want as much. The only thing is, one, Raw is 1 hour longer, and two, Raw is Raw. But I can't wait for the draft to make Raw the good show.
No, it's not happening. It's not happening. I'm keeping, as long as I keep the majority of the interesting people, I'm happy. It's fine. All fine.
We will soon find out where Jinder lies. But
on social media,
I don't know, because we'll soon find out. By the time this goes out, the draft has already happened. Because I don't know how this draft is going to work. Are they essentially scrapping everything and starting a new draft again?
Yes, they're doing
80 superstars from across brands,
and they're doing it the same way they did last year, where it's Fox picking for SmackDown, USA picking.
You mean the war rooms? And we're going to get network executive reactions?
Fox yes, robot! We are.
And we're getting the weird so Fox robot, and it's going to be great.
Yeah! That we didn't totally choose this pick. Oh.
We want Reed's notes. Ayo Shirai. We want her.
Oh, God.
Wow. This is going to be a dumpster fire. I can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
We're signing a free agent, a Kazuaka Kanada. he's apparently had a great series of matches with Kenny Omega. Big fan. He's coming to Fox. But yeah, that wraps up everything. One last decision to make before we go off air. Who plays us out this week?
Ember.
I feel like it has to be Ember Moon. Yep.
Good luck finding a new team.
Then we'll play our old one.
Thank you very much for listening. I've been Liam. I've been Liam Asher. He's been Michael Fire. He's been Innocent Faye. And always remember, Ember starts a fire.
You remember